From the snow-filled mountains in the middle of Norway, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, is a cyclist's worst enemy the grey zone? Doing too much riding in the middle that's always the same, when in reality going easier and going harder might be much better.
And what implications does it have for your health as well as your fitness?
We have also got a new electric four-wheeled Honda that thinks it's a bike. What links six of the seven happiest countries in the world?
Could be a clue that we're talking about it, couldn't we? How AliExpress and Specialized forward a huge counterfeit bike network. Plus, in just a moment, how Pogacar hasn't managed to match Lance Armstrong. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Colnago just sold a Y1 RS bike for $190,000. It turns out all you need to do to significantly increase the value of your bike is get Tadej Pogacar to ride it at the Tour de France, the Europeans, the World, and Il Lombardia. And then just auction it off at Sotheby's.
Yeah, and it probably helped that the bike is virtually unbeaten, isn't it? But unfortunately for Tadej, a Lance Armstrong Trek still holds the record for the most expensive bike ever sold at $500,000.
The fact that it was painted by Damien Hirst might have had something to do with that.
Yeah, because it definitely didn't go as fast or win as much, did it?
Shots fired early in the show, Si. We also learned that Mathieu van der Poel and Wout van Aert are going to be back in action very, very soon.
Yes, both of them have announced their provisional cyclocross schedules, and whilst van der Poel should start this weekend, they will meet for the first time at the Antwerp round of the UCI World Cup on the 20th of December.
Not far away, is it? Van der Poel's cross comeback is, incidentally, the same day as size, isn't it? Although you're not doing it at the World Cup in Antwerp.
No, start money there wasn't good enough. No. So I'm going to be racing in Keynsham, which, although closer to home, is arguably bigger and more important.
Don't forget to go fairly easy at Keynsham, mate. It's a dangerous course, that one, as I found out a couple of years ago.
I'd almost forgotten how the highly technical flat grassy field laid waste to your poor ankle, didn't it? But anyway, Alex is racing with me.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's another cross expert, so hopefully he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Now, I was hoping that spending the last month flogging myself on my fixed gear bike as an experiment for a video may have helped my fitness for this weekend, but it doesn't seem to have done.
Oh, dear.
No, if you watch the video of my journey of fixie cycling from the weekend, then you'll have seen why I think it hasn't as well.
If you haven't watched it yet, there are summarised size findings from that video. So riding it was too hard to ever be easy, but never quite hard enough to really be hard.
Exactly.
Is that about right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, every ride was basically the same. Like, I couldn't ride fast enough on the flat bits because the gear wasn't big enough. But then the gear was too big to go up hills easily. So it was hard enough to hurt my legs, but not hard enough to get any kind of training effect. So I felt like I was putting the effort in. I was getting really sore legs, but was I actually getting anything out?
Well, it is a good point to raise, I would say, this one. I mean, of course, it might not look to apply to those of you who ride bikes purely for leisure and pleasure and are not...
Nice run.
Thank you very much, mate. And I'm not looking to get fitter or faster.
Great alliteration.
But it is relevant. I'd say it's relevant to all of us.
Well, it is, yes. So we'll go back to the basics, shall we? So the science of training can be complicated, can't it? But it can also very easily be overcomplicated. We can get so caught up with the latest must-do sessions or trends that we actually lose sight of the basics.
Like, more training will get you fitter, but then too much is also bad.
Yes, exactly. The balance, I think, is maximising the training that you do in the time you have available. So, for example, pro cyclists will do a higher percentage of relatively easy miles because they do more hours. So they therefore have to do more easy miles, because if they rode any harder, they just wouldn't be able to do the same amount of hours.
No, but then most people aren't pro. So for the rest of us, do some really hard sessions and some easier rides where you don't ever press on the pedals too hard. Don't just do ride where you do a bit of everything, unless, of course, those are the rides that you really, really love.
Yeah, in which case, crack on. Yeah. But, and I say this as someone whose weeks can often look very similar from a riding perspective, but I've got to say, Sunday night, just the other day, I did a ridiculously hard Zwift session.
You're telling me, yeah.
Yeah, for the first time. I've been telling everyone, I've been really proud. But I did it for the first time in a while, and then I rode in very gently to work the next day. And do you know what? It felt really, really good.
Hmm. Well, you must have done. You've been banging on about it.
I've been buzzing, yeah.
There is another risk of doing too much in that middle grey area, or at least one that's often talked about, which is like the zone 3 sweet spot style sessions, isn't it? The idea here is that exercise at that intensity is a waste because, again, not hard enough to be hard, but not easy enough to be easy. So you'll basically get tired without that much benefit, supposedly.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that one.
No, me neither.
So I think it's certainly less relevant to cyclists, isn't it? Runners can very easily get stuck in this trap. And so actually, if you type in zone 3 or the grey zone, as it can also be called, most of the articles that come up will be about runners. Right. Whereas as a bike rider, it's actually really hard to ride zone 3 everywhere, isn't it? But it means that when you do zone 3 for like shorter intervals, it can be super effective because actually you can do more of that than you would do higher zones without getting super knackered. So therefore, the benefits kind of stack up, don't they?
Yeah, they do, but if that was all you ever did, which it can easily be, I think, like you said, for runners, then yes, you wouldn't be as fit as you otherwise would be, and you would also get tired. Although if you don't have loads of time to train, it is fair to say, I would say, that zone 3 is going to be more productive than lower intensities done all the time. And regardless, you should still ride at higher intensities.
Yeah, which is, I think, where we came back to initially, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
For most people, though, I think that not going easy enough isn't the problem, although, as we said, stopping doing really hard bits in easy rides should be a good thing. But really, what we could all benefit from, all of us, is doing some proper high intensity in our rides, because there's something else to bear in mind, isn't it? So even for those of you that aren't interested in getting fitter, it's your health.
It's your health, which was a topic that was on the agenda for Alex Hutchinson, who writes a brilliant column in Outside magazine called Sweat Science.
Yeah, we have mentioned him before.
We have, multiple times. So he references a recent effort from top scientists to a worldwide consensus on language around exercise intensity.
Yes. Now, one graph towards the end of that article was particularly striking, wasn't it? It shows the effect of high-intensity exercise on all-cause mortality reduction. Basically, like, how early you die, isn't it? What it shows is, firstly, how potent high-intensity exercise is when it comes to reducing the risk of death, basically. But then, secondly, that you won't get the same benefits from moderate exercise no matter how much of it you do.
And those findings were actually backed up by a more recent study entitled Intensity or Volume, the Role of Physical Activity in Longevity. That slide was published in the European Journal of Preventative Cardiology.
Oh, that is one of my favourites,
Dan. I knew it would be.
Flipping love that one. Now, it concluded, the article, that intensity is the main driver of reduced risk for both all-cause and cardiovascular disease mortality. And also that sustained bouts of high-intensity exercise provided even more benefit than effort spread throughout the day. So I think repeated 4 to 6 minute intervals rather than 30-second sprints a few times a day, right?
Which sounds a bit weird, yeah, but the latter has been touted as something that's hugely beneficial to your health before, hasn't it? But they found it's not beneficial, but it's better to do those sustained bouts. This is something that's actually quite timely for me at the moment, Si. So on Thursday, here on GCN, we're putting out a video with Lorraine, who's my wife, in case you don't know. She had a VO2 max test last week, and for the next 8 weeks, she's going to be doing 2 Zwift sessions a week, 45 minutes per session. One's going to be moderate intensity zone 2, one of which we did together, actually, on Zwift yesterday. And one will be a traditional 4x4 VO2 max session each week.
Who prescribed those, then?
I did.
Coach Dan.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a difficult relationship, coach and husband, Dan.
It could be a big test.
I was going to say,
But I did prescribe those with good reason.
Go on.
The combination of those two on top of the 2 or 3 strength sessions that he normally does each week should be, as we see just before, the optimal combination, should I say, for long-term health according to those studies. Plus, I'm hoping what it'll also do is encourage me to do those same sessions throughout the winter for the next 8 weeks.
Just out of interest, what time are those sessions going to be?
They are going to be at midday GMT on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Are you calling that work time or lunch break?
Well, let's call that lunch break, shall we? Or I might have lunch break afterwards. Yeah. Oh, and incidentally, everyone watching this is welcome to join as well. You'll find details on the GCN Club on Zwift, but generally, as I said, there'll be Tuesdays and Thursdays at midday GMT. but Christmas Day on a Thursday, that we might do a different one that particular week. And there'll be banded rides as well, so that we can all stay together. The more the merrier.
Lorraine doesn't drop you, basically.
Oh, because they're banded, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, it's also going to be an experiment for me, as I said. How much of my cycling fitness, hard-earned cycling fitness from the summer months, can I maintain through 2 45-minute Zwift sessions per week?
Yeah, well, since they're polarised sessions, i.e. one fairly easy and one fairly hard, I assume they should work quite well, really. And let's be honest, an hour and a half each week is not much less than what you were doing in the lead-up to the Gravel World Champs, is it, really?
Yeah, you do have a point. Well, I was tapering at that point to my A goal for the year, wasn't I?
6-week taper?
I wanted to be fresh.
Yeah, okay. Just out of interest, what are you calling the video with Lorraine this week?
Well, it's not got past HR yet, but I'm hoping it's going to be How Fit Is My Wife? We'll see. Yeah, you'll find out on Thursday whether it got past HR or not.
Ah, right. Well, moving on from that, it's kind of time to throw out to you guys, really. Have you ever found yourself stuck in a training rut whereby you're not sort of, you're basically always doing the same thing and you're not really distinguishing enough between intensities, i.e. every ride is a little bit of everything, and so you just kind of carry on in the same thing? Have you ever done that? I bet you haven't done that, have you?
Well, I used to do a lot of grey area, sort of zone 3/sweet spot riding. And the reason I agreed with you earlier that I think it can be quite potent still is that I made some quite big gains in my FTP at a point in my life where I'd already been a full-time rider for a good 6-7 years.
Yeah, so I did exactly that. Same thing, sweet spot efforts, but it was done in a very structured way, which is, I guess, what you did, right? So it's like I wasn't going out and doing high intensity stuff in that ride. It was a sweet spot ride, and then I do a different intensity ride the next day or the day after that, as opposed to just like going out, getting really sore legs and not actually really achieving anything.
Yeah, I think also you need to do other intervals obviously at the same time, don't you?
Yeah.
So let us know if you've ever got stuck in a rut from that point of view, or maybe you found those things potent as well. Or maybe you've recently added some high intensity intervals after reading about their benefits for health span. If you've done that, let us know how you're getting on in the comments section down below.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now. I'm going to start with the hugely controversial news that Lance Armstrong, him again, twice in a week, has agreed to narrate a cycling documentary about Schwinn bikes.
Does seem like a little bit of an odd choice.
It does a bit, doesn't it?
But nevertheless, we were quite surprised to see how this story has made the headlines as widely as it has. Although, when you read on a little further, the fact that the video we made heavily using AI to take archive photos and turn them into video also seems a bit strange.
It does. Seems like cheating.
AI?
Well, just like getting AI to turn your photos into video. Yeah. Anyway, it would be fitting, wouldn't it, if it was cheating?
Shall I take that shovel off you?
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. It sounds quite interesting, actually.
It does.
Well, maybe I'm not very interested in Schwinn, if I'm totally honest. You know, but the process is quite interesting.
I don't think he'll be narrating one about Trek, will he?
No, maybe not. Right, moving on. We talked about cyclists running a couple of weeks back, didn't we, and how fast they were. But Cycling Weekly had a great interview with a World and Olympic medal winning middle distance runner this week.
That being Georgia Hunter-Bell, who made the headlines here in the UK not only for winning an Olympic medal in Paris, but also for making a fairy tale comeback to elite running many years after giving it up, after persistent injuries left her with little option to do so.
Yeah, now what's changed this time is the question. Well, potentially it's cycling. It turns out, according to the article anyway, that having fallen in love with cycling in 2020, she continues to ride about 100 miles per week in addition to doing an equal volume of running.
Probably all in the grey zone.
Well, is it, Dan? No, I think it's polarised, mate. I think she does like steady bike rides and then high-intensity running.
Quite possibly, yeah. Reduced risk of injury, wouldn't it?
There you go.
Oh, that just made me wonder why you're as bad at running as you are, Si.
What, because I do lots of cycling, you mean? We established...
You should be so fast.
Well, we established when you made your video about why cyclists can't run this year that it's because my ankles are too flexible.
They're too something, your ankles, aren't they? Flexible is not the first word that would come to my mind.
Thank you, mate.
When thinking about
it. Thank you, Dan. Yeah. Should we move on to something lighter? Shall we do this?
Lighter than your ankles? Well, the world's our oyster, isn't it? Yeah. Pull your boots.
They are full. Right. Let's move on to the secrets of the happiest nations on earth. Yes, okay, right. This is from the People for Bikes CEO, Jen Dice. She did a TED Talk recently. Now, she has made the link between Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Norway, Sweden and the Netherlands topping most of the lists of the happiest countries on Earth, and the relatively high percentage of journeys taken by bike in those countries.
So according to the World Population Review, those six countries were number 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 and 7 on the list of happiest countries, and all bar Iceland topped the list of cycling countries worldwide.
Yeah, and to be fair, I can sympathise with Iceland not being in the top of that list because their country is second only to the UK for horrendous weather, isn't it? Christ. Canadians, I'm including you in that.
My comments are going to go wild.
Oh, they are, yeah. We've got Lance, we've got anti-Canadian winter sentiment.
We've got a lot going on this week. Yeah. Anyway, while I suspect there might be other factors explaining why those countries top the list of happiness, you know what? I actually think that cycling almost certainly does help.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there is that phrase, correlation does not prove causation, isn't there? But it can certainly hint at it, can't it? Plus, we know that people who cycle are healthier, both physically, especially for the high-intensity stuff, and mentally. And we spend more time in nature, which is another thing. And we're better connected with one another. You don't get that in the gym, do you, Dan?
No, nor will I get it on my 16 sessions on Zwift with Lorraine, although we are doing it together.
So you will be connected.
There's a social aspect, isn't there?
Yeah.
But I have got more muscles than ever before by going to the gym, so there is that positive.
As a consolation prize. In your loneliness, you can just flex your biceps.
Yeah, we have got a mirror in the Zwifting room, so that's handy. Right, moving on. Many of you will have seen Si's video where he rode a Vokyu, a four-wheeled electric cargo bike, not so long ago.
Yes, it was an amazing bit of kit, that, wasn't it? But it proved quite controversial in the comments. I think that bikes of that ilk genuinely are part of the future of urban mobility, Dan. And it seems like Honda agrees because this is their new quadricycle.
Whoa. Mm. Like the Vok, it's designed to comply with electrically assisted pedal cycling regulations, meaning that you can use it in cycling infrastructure. And like the Vok as well, the pedals are not physically connected to the motor. It's rated to carry much greater loads, though, up to about 700 kilos.
That's quite a beast, isn't it?
It's big.
Very big, isn't it? I can't help but look at that, though, and see a vehicle that, a little bit like a Dalek, would get stuck at the first speed bump.
Yeah, those are quite small wheels, really,
aren't they? Yes, they are, yeah.
Still, I'm betting that you want the test ride one.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no, no. Although it only goes 12 miles per hour. So I'm not getting super excited.
That sounds like the grey zone as well to me.
Yeah, it does, really, doesn't it?
Right, what about that counterfeit bike network? Well, bicycle retailer reported that Chinese authorities have seized $1.6 million worth of counterfeit bike products from two factories there.
Yeah, Specialized made up by far and away the largest amount of the fake products, but Cannondale, Cervelo, Trek and Pinarello were all in there as well. It's worrying. Like, we know that it's out there, right? Mm. But, I mean, like, yeah.
Well, yeah, you do wonder if it's the tip of the iceberg or whether it's not really that prevalent in cycling circles. You just don't know, do you?
I don't think it's a problem with buying a new bike, is it? But it is the kind of thing that you should probably think about if you're buying a second-hand bike.
How do you know? Well, original receipt, maybe, but how many people keep them from a few years back?
Do you know what, right? I kind of always thought it was fairly easy to know this stuff, but I, it turns out, bought a fake pair of trainers.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where from?
From the internet. Oh, so I did what everyone does.
That's not very specific.
Well, so I did what everyone does, and I was like, I found a pair of shoes that I wanted, so I Googled it, and it came up with, like, between, I think it was like 140 quid and something else, and then there's this one shop that had a pair for like 90 quid, and I was like, brilliant. You know, there's always one shop that's like, oh, we've got one pair out the back, and we just want to get rid of them. So I bought them from the shop, and they turned up, and I was like, a bit less comfortable than I thought. But anyway, I modified them, and then to fit. Well, there was like a weird bit at the back that really pressed into my ankles. And I just assumed that that was because of my ankles and not because of the shoes. The
standard thing you have to do with every pair of shoes.
Just hollow them out a bit more. Yeah. Anyway, it turns out after a few months that the soles delaminated from the uppers. And I was like, that's a bit crap, right? So I emailed the customer service of the company that makes the trainers. Yeah. And they came back to me, I'm really sorry, but these are counterfeits. And I was like, you're kidding. They're like, well, why don't you just like get in touch with the shop that you bought it off? So I got in touch with the shop that I bought it off. It turns out it completely disappeared.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had actually bought a pair of fakes. Anyway, I glued them back together and they're still going strong.
Maybe this is why your running's not great. Maybe you could be going
got fake shoes. Well, yeah, maybe. No, but anyway, I was just like, previously I had limited sympathy with people for buying counterfeit products. And now I'm like, oh God, no, it's easier said than done.
Less dangerous, I'd imagine, than counterfeit bikes could be.
But yeah, yes, I mean, the sole's delaminated and it was a mild trip hazard, but other than that, it was fine. It's not like my face was going to hit the floor. But
Are you sure you didn't make up the story about being on a bike when you fell into the brambles? Actually, just had a flappy shoe sole.
My trainers failed catastrophically.
I can't tell anybody this. I'll make up something about being on the bike.
They'll believe me if I said I fell off my bike. Yeah, true.
Okay, I'm going to switch things up now.
Okay, all right.
And I'm actually going to mention the C word, Christmas.
Oh, okay, good.
We decided we're allowed to mention Christmas now that it's December.
Okay.
So if you're thinking of making a purchase over on our GCN shop, firstly, there are still some big discounts to be had, even though I have actually switched the Black Friday deals off at this point.
Well done, mate. Well
Thank
done.
You.
What you will need to know, though, is that the final shipping dates for if you want to get your order delivered before Christmas, they should be on screen for you to see right now. But essentially, you need to, or you should order this week, shouldn't you, in order to feel relaxed and comfortable. But what was it? If you're in the UK...
If you're in the UK, anything up to the 18th of December, you should be absolutely fine. We'll do our best to get it out to you before Christmas Day. If you're in Europe, depends which part of Europe, somewhere between the 11th and the 18th, and I think in the US it's the 11th. As we said, they should be on the screen right now. But if you're unsure of exactly what to get your friend or partner or relative, etc., we should remind you we do also sell gift cards, and with those, there's no cut-off date to get it before Christmas.
Apart from the fact that you need to do it on or before the 25th of December.
Well, yeah, apart from that, but you could probably do it on the day, like you said, Si.
As long as you've got a printer that works, you know.
Well, I'm assuming you can just screenshot and I don't know.
Well, I know,
I should know these bits.
It's nice to have a physical thing, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, technically you could, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Good to know that that's there if you get desperate at the last moment, isn't it? And as ever, your support is always very much appreciated. Right, let's finish Cycling Shorts by announcing the lucky winners of our Topeak giveaway. So getting their hands on a Z-Rack with strap mount, a U-Shell dry bag and a U-Shell for Z-Rack Essential are...
Wow, Christmas is coming early.
Oh.
For James Mansfield, KP Cahonan and Pete Richards.
Well done to all of you. If you haven't already heard from us, then you will do so soon. Now, if you didn't win on that giveaway, got another opportunity now, courtesy of Pirelli tyres. So we've got 5 sets of Cinturato Gravel M tyres up for grabs.
Good for now, the M's. Knobblies. Mm. Good for mud.
Good for Keynesham.
Well, I'm going for cyclocross tyres.
Well, yeah. Makes sense for a cyclocross race, doesn't it?
Well, it does, yeah. There will be a twist, actually, Dan.
Oh, will there? Okay.
Yeah, as the viewers will find out. Right, so there is a link to the giveaway in the description below, by the way, we should say. Entries are basically open to all locations worldwide, except for those that are not listed on the DHL website.
Mm, yeah, if DHL doesn't deliver where you are, don't enter.
Yeah. I mean, I assume they deliver just about everywhere, don't they?
I assume so, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Did you look to see where they don't deliver?
I looked to see where they do deliver and couldn't deduce where they don't. It was a vast list of countries.
Okay.
Next up, /bodge of the week. If you'd like to get involved in this part of the show, all you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader, where you can upload your hacks and bodges, or those that you've seen out and about, which is what this first one is, from Premek Staroveski. Clear hack, as there's no zip ties. There's not much of a description to this. I guess the picture does the talking, side, so we'd better explain it. All they've written is, it is a legit picture. I just improved it to better resolution. Now, if you have to state it's a legit picture, I'm already suspicious.
Yes. But, I mean, it is mildly bonkers, isn't it? So this is a handlebar stem and handlebar. And it looks like to fit the bar in the stem, a load of nails have been wedged inside. I'm not entirely sure what the black bits are.
Just bits of welding, isn't it?
I mean, it is terrifying.
And the nails have
it?
Been there just to wedge in the handlebar to presumably stop it rotating round inside the stem, and then it's all been sort of welded together. I mean, they're right, there are no zip ties in sight. This kind of goes back to what we often say for this type of photo, is that there are certain parts of the world where they just can't afford to replace things.
No.
So this could genuinely be a solution to keep somebody mobile and out on the road that hasn't got enough money to get another bike.
Do you know what it is then, mate? It's a hack.
Well, if that is the situation, then absolutely. In any other situation, it's a bodge.
Yes. Okay. All right. I think we agree on that one. Next up, we've got this one sent in by Eamon. He says, pinning a race number to your own jersey can be surprisingly frustrating. Picking the number up on race day only adds to the challenge. Even if you can track down someone to help, getting poked by safety pins from a well-meaning but clumsy helper is definitely not the kind of pre-race stimulation anyone wants. I think that's fair. Anyway, so Eamon's hack is bring a pillow to the race, slide it inside your jersey, then use a multi-purpose spray adhesive to position the number exactly where you want it and add a few pins for extra security, then remove the pillow. The result, a perfectly placed, ready to race number.
Without a single jab to your skin.
Yeah.
It does sound safer, doesn't it?
It does. Do you think that the multi-purpose spray adhesive leaves nasty marks all over your cycling jersey?
I was wondering that because with the self-adhesive numbers that you get in some races...
I used to trash your jersey.
Well, if you put them in the wash afterwards, I think they were okay if you peeled them off immediately afterwards, if memory serves me correctly, from that long ago.
Mm. Do you know what? My tip is to put your jersey over your knees.
That's what I do.
And then you can spread your knees as wide as you feel like your back is. And then you can pin them on yourself with as much care as you want.
Okay.
And if you use your pockets, then you're unlikely to stab yourself in the legs.
Yeah, I always use the pockets.
Yeah. But I like this, Eamon. I'm going to give it a hack.
A lot of thought's gone into it, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
And it sounds like it works, so I'm going to give that a hack as well. Next up, this one from Ben. Most aero bike light, I've put a £5 rear light from Halfords on the seat post, putting the circle part of the light round the seat post, then the light on the top, then hooking it back on. Hard to explain, easy to see. The name of the lights are the super slim LED lights. You turn it off through the pressure relief channel.
Sorry. I mean, I think that's quite good, actually. It doesn't look like the most hardcore of rear lights, but as far as mounting techniques
go... Some of them are so bright now that even if they don't look like much, they're plenty bright enough for people to see you from behind.
Well, this is true. And actually, when you're on a group ride, half the time you end up having to ask people to switch them off.
Because they're so bright.
Well, yeah. Especially if it's like actually nighttime.
Really?
Well, then you can't see anything, can you? But this is like super cool. So I'm really impressed that you have thought about removing your saddle in order to get it on, but I think that's well good.
Yeah. Hack from me?
Yeah, hack from me as well. Super nice.
Cool. Next up. I mean, if we describe this one to podcast listeners, we could be here all day, but I'll describe it as Ian Collins has done so to start with. After coming back to England for a brief visit and meeting Ollie... Sorry about that. I then continued to London and spotted this monstrosity. Even the children were bemused. Would you like to get started with this? Well, it's a fixie to start with.
It is a fixie, yeah. So one of my crew. so it's an aero-looking frame set to which someone has added a quite long travel pair of suspension forks.
Buckloss suspension forks.
Then the wheels are gold deep section aluminium rims.
With what looks to be 21mm tyres on.
Yeah. Then there's a matching gold aero seat post. But then this is where it's really weird, doesn't it, basically? So we have a pair of drop handlebars. We have multiple aero extensions. And I think, by the look of it, multiple stems as well.
Well, there's multiple stems. I think there's two aero bars, one of which is the right way up at the very top of the bike. The other which is
three,
up.
Mate.
Well, I think they're bullhorn bars that are equal width to the drop bars.
Oh, those are handlebars.
I reckon it's the second set of handlebars.
So I reckon you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hand positions on there.
At least, yeah. And then what you failed to mention is there are a bunch of inner tubes wrapped around said handlebar extensions and between the handlebars and the seat post.
No idea what those are for.
No. I mean, he obviously cares about it because he's got two locks locking this bike up.
Well, I mean, it's obviously taking a lot of work putting that together.
I don't know where to start. Even having described it in great detail, it's absolutely bonkers.
It's not aero, is it? In spite of having 3 pairs of yellow bars.
Yeah, despite all the options. I'm going bodge, I'm afraid.
Well, like I said, someone's put care and attention into this.
They have.
It's not a hack, though, is it?
No.
No, it's not a hack.
No, I haven't seen one like that for a long time.
All right, bodge. Okay, and then lastly, we got this from Louis the Millbilly. Hey chaps, I've just had shoulder surgery and will not be able to ride a conventional bike for at least 4 months. Oh man, that sucks. Sorry to hear that. Fortunately, I had plenty of time before surgery to build this trainer rig. I welded some scrap metal tube together to make the frame, reconfigured the handlebars to mount off the back of the seat post, and nicked the seat from my ride-on mower. There's no need to mow in winter. Note, not a single zip tie was used, just Velcro cable ties to hold the cable housings in place. Soft side in, of course. That, I love it. I mean,
that is dedication.
That is, yeah.
In so many respects, that is dedication to continuing on riding, but then to put that effort into what looks like a very professionally built contraption,
I've got to say. So for podcast listeners, what you have missed out on is the fact that there is a Trek, what is that, an ALR maybe, a Mondo ALR, that's still attached to the trainer, and then this kind of like seat that's bolted on behind the bike that presumably still allows him to reach the pedals.
It's also got a curved screen TV. There's a lot going on here. I'm saying absolute hack. Like, if you really, really want to carry on pedaling when you've got an injury like that, then doesn't look like there's much better way to do so.
And that's some mighty fine welding as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here for that. That's absolutely amazing.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
I continue to love this part of the show.
Yeah.
Very much so this week. Thanks for all the submissions. I look forward to seeing them again in 7 days' time.
Just one thing about that last one. Do you think after 4 months of sweating profusely on his lawnmower seat, there might be an issue with bolting it back onto the lawnmower.
Might have rusted.
Well, maybe gets a little bit like mouldy, maybe a bit like.
Well, given how meticulous he's been with all of this planning, I think he might clean the seat.
All right, clean your seat. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second after we have read out the results from last week.
Last week's photo was this one from the Ghent 6 Day. This is Philip Heinen of the Netherlands. Our winner this week is Kid Shibua, who put cyclist searches for his handlebars after team assures him they're already attached.
I like that. That's very good. This is a picture of the most lethal-looking drop handlebars I've ever seen. Yes. Yeah, no matter how many times you look at them, they don't look any less lethal, do they, really? But anyway,
amazing stuff.
Get in touch, Kid Shibuya, and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you.
This week's photo is from a few weeks ago. This is from the Singapore Criterium, the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to caption competitions. It's Jonathan Milan, sprinter extraordinaire with his teammate Ed Turns. I will get you started. Let me just take a look at what's in the middle of Lidl this week.
I mean, I see where you've gone with it, Dan. Not your best, maybe.
Nothing that takes my fancy this week, unfortunately.
Right, see if you can beat Dan's caption competition there. And if you don't know what on earth he's talking about, then do you care to explain about the middle of Lidl?
People know what the middle of Lidl is, surely.
I don't know.
All sorts of goodies that you can get at great prices that rotate every month or so.
Do people in Australia, USA, have they got Lidl?
I'd imagine they make the trip to Europe specifically. I don't know whether they're in Australia. I don't think they're in the US, are they?
No, I don't think they are, yeah.
No. Anyway.
All right. Well, just straight over your head. Get involved, though. See what you can do.
Good luck. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN this week, but first up, comments from underneath last week's videos. Starting underneath the GCN show, which was entitled "We Can't Believe We Used to Use These Products." As expected, a lot of controversy around size pick of quick releases. David Cotman put, "Still use quick releases, never had one fail." About 150 likes on that comment.
Yeah, fair.
John Strack put, "You can't tell me quick releases aren't easier than through axles." 200 likes on that comment.
I'm not sure I did say they weren't easier, did I?
No, you might not have done.
No, I've got nothing against quick releases, like we said. I just find that personally now they make me feel a little bit nervous. Mm. And this is a problem.
I mean, this coming from someone that's quite happy to purchase counterfeit trainers.
I wasn't happy to purchase counterfeit trainers. That's my whole point. I accidentally purchased them.
Yeah.
And then they sent me headfirst into a bramble bush.
Mm.
So watch out. No, I think quick releases are totally cool and legit, but it's just one of those things where just perspectives move on, don't they?
True. Paul Collingridge put, you fully described my entire cycling setup. Quick release, wide computer, 23C tyres, huge batteries of halogen lamps, add a triple chain set and those brake lever extensions riding on the centre of the bars, down tube shifters, all perfectly fine for a 12K commute.
Go for it, Paul. I mean, I think we pretty much did say that, didn't we? There's like, no matter what you ride, it's all great.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. And then T.T. Walt said, Bicycle Tart. That was my nickname in the 90s.
Yes, if you didn't watch last week's show, instead of saying Bicyclette Art, I read it out as Bicycle Tart accidentally. Yeah. I didn't live that down.
No.
Corrections Corner as well, actually, from underneath last week's show. A lot of comments, one of which came from Fraser Goodwin, who said, pretty sure Portland in 35th place is in Oregon above Minneapolis in 44th, and so is top of the USA list of best place to ride bike. Best places to ride bike.
Apologies to Portland. Mm. I missed that completely. So, yes. Kind of makes sense as well. Portland is renowned as being like a bit of a cycling hotspot, isn't it?
Yeah. But, where was Bristol again? Is it above or below 35th?
Oh, it was like 60-something, wasn't it?
Oh, was it that far down?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, they said there weren't enough influencers living there, basically. Not enough people
very true.
Right, hopefully you've all watched Connor's video by now where he has thrown his hat into the ring for a race which scares the absolute living daylights out of him, doesn't it? Well, yeah. The Atlas Mountain Race, arguably one of the toughest ultra-endurance cycling races out there. And he's going to do it.
Mm. It's not far away, is it?
No, it's not. Good lad, Connor. He's taking it seriously. In preparation, he's bought an enormous bowl, hasn't he?
That's crazy. Honestly, he's got a bowl for his food in the office. I'm not joking you. What, would you say that's an exaggeration? No, it's about
it's
that,
like a washing up bowl, isn't it? I mean, it's like...
It's crazy.
It's absolutely vast, yeah. But when Connor trains...
He eats
an awful lot. Yeah. So he has bought a trough, basically, to eat. It's going to be expensive for him, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's check he doesn't put it through on expenses.
Good point. Yeah. Anyway, loads of people supporting Connor. Lots of people taking the piss out of Connor as well, actually. Dave Pittinger. It's called water, Connor. Remember to drink it.
Graham Foot, bicycle lover, this channel is getting better every week. Thank you very much, Graham. Much appreciated. That jitsu guy.
Jiu-jitsu, sorry.
There will be so many gubbins.
There'll be so many gubbins. It's going to be bonkers. Yeah. Connor's going to go gubbin crazy. And then Robert Langland, you have people all over the world supporting you, Connor. Go, young man. Go and challenge yourself. Pura vida.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
Meanwhile, under the video we mentioned earlier, which is Si riding a single speed fixed gear bike for a few weeks, the cat's on holiday put, you know you've got the correct gear ratio when it's the wrong gear in every situation. Facts.
That did make me chuckle a lot when I saw that.
Whilst Matter 9744 put, I prefer the half brother of fixies, single speed with brakes. Still got your freewheel.
I know.
I prefer bikes with gears.
Well, yeah, this is it. I sort of feel like if you're going to go like on the road, I feel like it's fixed or gears, isn't it, really? I don't really see the point. I see the point of single speed. I just don't want to ride one, basically. Gordon Shumway, how to make your commute paid work time. Nicely done, Si. Yeah. So you can play that game, eh, Dan?
Exactly, yeah. And then finally, Toby Archer, but I already hold Si in pretty high regard, but with the exception of the silly massive sunglasses, those yellow Crocs now bring him up to fashion guru status.
They are cool, aren't they?
Are they real? That's the question.
They're almost as polarising as... I hope they're real. They're as polarising as my hand-painted fixie, basically. Which is to say that
cool
some...
Cool thumbnail, that one. No, I like that one.
It was very cool. Some, like Toby, get it, then get it. And then other people, like my wife, don't.
No.
She does not like my fix-it. She does not like my Crocs.
No. Strange that.
Weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Right then, there's only one video you really need to watch this week. That comes out on Thursday, and it is How Fit Is My Wife?
Oh, that's amazing. I cannot wait to see whether that flies or tanks, that video.
No.
No, but let's, you know... It's going to make me laugh, so that's good.
We've got one thumbnail photo that got Ben just take us two on our bed.
He didn't.
I said, I bet you didn't expect that when you came down today. I probably won't use that in the thumbnail, but at least we've got it for our own use later.
Yeah, fair. Brilliant. On Saturday, Ollie has been catching up with a man who has been busy trying to break the land speed cycling record. Oof. And it's absolutely bonkers. Yeah. I mean, we're talking like silly, silly speeds, aren't we? 190 miles an hour kind of job.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, not even worth thinking about. But then on Sunday, something a little gentler, less fast. Are titanium bikes any good? So Alex and I had the privilege of riding... Oh, we talked about this last week, didn't we? Didn't put it out on Sunday.
No, it got delayed. So yeah. If you watched last week's show, you'll know what it's all about. But if you didn't, it's a light speed from a Tour de France team from the late 90s, isn't it?
Indeed. And yeah, titanium never won the Tour de France. Why not? Is it rubbish? We find out.
Right, that's the end of another GCN show. We'll see you again this time next week.